Let's get started again. Well, here we are, the hardcore, the irreducible, those who are truly passionate about this topic, apparently, passionate enough to stick around all day. But it's been a very interesting day, and I hope you'll agree. We're going to have a short now wrap-up and closing session, and to begin the wrap-up comments, I'd like to invite Norman Segalowicz, who's a professor at Concordia, a very well-respected researcher in linguistics and psychology, and I think it's fair to call him essentially a quasi-co-PI on this project for several years now. I think in many ways it's been a collaboration between McGill and Concordia. Norman worked with Calmin Laubau, who was previously the PI on this project, and he's worked with me. He's supported me very effectively in that role, given me guidance when I needed it, because I sometimes do. And so I'd like to invite him to give us his take on what we've been up to for these years.
So I want to congratulate all of you for making it to this end of the day. I think we're all a bit tired. This has been a conference about breaking the barriers, and we've been trying to talk about change. And it was difficult to put together this wrap-up because there were so many ideas and interesting things mentioned. I didn't want to just make a laundry list, and I maybe have ended up with a bit of a laundry list, but I'm going to try to put a little narrative to it if I can. So the focus really is to bring about change. And there is one change which we haven't talked about much, but I think is really worthwhile signaling to you all. When this whole project started some 7-8 years ago, with the generous help of Health Canada and the cooperation of McGill, there was a research team formed, the HCOM research team, but the people who were in that team were not doing work in health research. They were, in their own right, sociolinguists, applied linguists, psychologists, people in different areas, language teachers, and we persuaded ourselves that maybe there's something worthwhile looking into here, and we formed this team. And we worked. We also worked well, I think, because of the incredible encouragement of Joanne Lévesque, who kept us on track for the first few years especially. There were moments when we needed that coaching and that encouragement, and Joanne, as people who know Joanne know, that she's very good at encouraging people to do things. But it was really good. And I think we have, in fact, delivered a deliverable that we didn't really plan on, in a sense, and we started to see that deliverable yesterday. We saw an incredible variety of projects. I don't think 8 years ago I would have believed that this variety, this number of projects, and this variety of projects would have been possible. There are publications in respected journals that have come out of this. There are research grants from other agencies that have come out of this. One, just to mention one I happen to know about, I'm sure there are others which I don't know about, but are there. Andrew and I have a research grant on this very theme with colleagues in Australia. So we've brought this whole theme now to Australia, which is, you know, I'm very excited about. And I think this is one of the wonderful spin-offs of this project. There's a special issue of a Canadian journal on this topic. So there's a lot happening. And it all happened because of this project. I don't think any of this would have happened without that initial start. When the people, the memory people came up and talked about who was at their table, I was astounded by the incredible representation of different disciplines. And there's the list. Look, I may have left some out. I was scribbling these down and trying to get them up on my slides. But this is really remarkable that so many different disciplines, so many different kinds of people would all come together on this project. So We started the conference, I guess, focusing a lot on linguistic barriers and cultural barriers that are attendant on linguistic barriers. And one of the early ideas that came up in the discussions was the idea of linguistic vitality, the vitality of a community to maintain its language, to use it, to feel respected, that it's recognized, and so on and so forth. And we heard about the direct evidence that such vitality has on health. I was particularly struck by Lawrence Kirmayr's example of how the presence of linguistic vitality in an Aboriginal community brings the suicide rate down to zero from astronomical rates when that's absent. So I think this kind of evidence is extremely important, and we should keep it in mind as we move forward. So we see linguistic vitality is a protective factor in mental health. That was the case that he was presenting. And I thought another really interesting idea was this whole idea about stories being a source of resilience. And of course, you can't have stories that mean anything to you unless they're in your language. So we see here the centrality of language as the key. Then we heard, not necessarily in the sequence, but we also heard about the political barriers in which this whole context of trying to promote the centrality of language and the respect for minority languages, this all occurs inside a political context. And so one of the lessons I think that we can learn from what we heard at this conference is that you can't separate the building of a pluralistic civil society from this respect for languages. And the strategy to address the linguistic barriers that we're all concerned about is going to require us to start thinking about the context of ideology, of history, of politics, of global mobility, the movement of people into Canada, into other countries who bring different languages and different cultures. This is the landscape. And we're going to have to take all of this into account. So it's not just a linguistics problem. It's not just a training of doctors problem. It's a really big problem with many, many dimensions. The issue of vitality, I think, was discussed in a really interesting way by Richard Bourris when he made it clear that it's not just a matter of having strong institutions, strong educational institutions, strong medical care institutions. There has to be a horizontal integration of all of these elements of linguistic vitality if this is going to work and be sustainable. So that's another dimension that we have to think about. And then people talked about a number of other barriers. There's the barriers of budget and bureaucracy and unions and so on, which we heard about in the last few presentations. And this brings to mind a quote which I often like to bring forward in this context from a psychiatrist, O'Neill, that conversation is at the heart of all human relationships and is the foundation of the physician-patient relationship. So again, it's this matter of stories, of the relationship at a human level between the health provider and the patient. And we can't have that without taking into account the language that is being spoken. So the nature of this conversation, though, changes from one community to the next. And we even heard about how this can change from one, say, Anglophone community to another Anglophone community, or one Francophone community to another Francophone community. So it has many subtle nuances that we have to take into account. And there was this idea of the idioms of distress. So we have to learn this and figure out how to build that into the caregiving process. So I tried to organize the main thoughts that I picked up, and afterwards we can have a discussion if you still have any energy left, in case I left some out. But what I'm taking away from this conference is an optimistic view, but nevertheless a very challenging one, which is that we need to create a huge change in the culture. But I'm optimistic that we can do this. It just will take time, energy, and dedication, but we've got a great start right here in this room. So One idea, which actually came up during lunch at the table I happened to be at, and then I heard one of the memory people, I think it was Andrew, mention this, I think is a wonderful idea, is we need to have somebody, we need to engage people to develop a business model of what it is we're after. And what is the cost of not finding solutions to linguistic barriers in healthcare? There certainly is a cost. I think everybody here agrees that there's a cost. If we can make that case, maybe we can start opening up other resources for us to address this problem in a more, in a larger fashion. Another idea was that the medical training that people undertake should involve cultural sensitivity training, and it often does, but we have to make this, we have to institutionalize this in a way so that it becomes accepted as the normal full part of medical training, that it's not just an interesting, curious add-on which people may or may not take full advantage of. It is part of medical delivery to understand this. So that's a project in itself. In other words, the issue of cultural sensitivity is not something that is just a problem over in this part of the country or in that part of the country or in this hospital or in that town, but is actually, it is a central part of medical care delivery, period. A distinction was made in one of the presentations between the role of language and culture in dealing with physical health versus mental health. So it seems that what I took away from that discussion was that it's important in both of them, but there's a special issue when it comes to mental health, and I think it's easy to understand why that's the case. And we can view the problem of delivering equitable health care to linguistic minorities as a specific problem that we're trying to solve. But we could also view it as what I said at the very beginning, as an essential component of building that pluralistic society that most people in advanced Western democracies believe in, but that this health care and language, respect for languages in the health care domain, that whole issue is actually an essential, one of the essential building blocks of doing that. And once, perhaps, once that is really understood by everybody, it will become easier again to open doors and have the problem properly addressed. And I think it was Lawrence Kirmayr who mentioned almost in passing that, you know, we have these pluralistic societies which can have conflicts and zero-sum games being played between the different communities within them. But we could also just look at all of this as having a creative tension, and that there's actually an advantage to having this multiplicity of communities and languages. So again, we have to find ways to articulate this, and because this way we can build that pluralistic society that we all want. Coming back again to a point that Bichard Bouris made, we need to promote the horizontal institutional bases for community vitality. But more than that, not only do we need that within the community, so in the case of the Anglophone community, the horizontal linkages between the various Anglophone institutions, but these institutions also have to develop linkages with their counterparts in the Francophone community so that everything is really properly integrated without any community being diluted or overwhelmed by the other community. So this is tricky, but this is something we have to think about and find ways to do. And one of the messages I'm taking home from this conference is that what we heard about Francophones in outside of Quebec, what we heard about the Anglophone situation in Quebec, what we heard about the situation in Wales, what we heard about the Aboriginals, there are specificities for each one of them. They all have their own characteristics, those, and their own specific problems. But there seems to be some overarching issues which all of them are faced with. And so perhaps what we need to do is continue, this is, today seems to be a one step forward in this direction, but we have to continue forming alliances across this landscape where you have all of these linguistic minorities all dealing with very similar problems in their own way. The more we can exchange and help each other, and maybe even banding together. So the research is not just about Anglophones in the Eastern Townships or Francophones in Saskatoon, but is in fact a part of a larger project which includes those, but has more momentum, more critical mass as a result. Another important point that was made was that there's the underrepresentation of Anglophone minorities in the health institutions in Quebec. So that's something that needs to be addressed. And I think we heard some very eloquent pleas and invitations to researchers to look at the community level for developing solutions to these problems, not to just work them out separately, then come in and say, here's the answer, but rather to work from the ground up with these groups. And to bring professionals into contact with the community so that they can really learn these cultural idioms that belong to the community. And we also heard more of a plea for university researchers to make direct contact with community organizations. And I think that those are good ideas. And this is starting to happen in Quebec with the CHSSN and the HCOM group and the McGill project, but we can see a lot more of it happening too. So if I can editorialize a little bit and give one of my own hobby horses here, I would really like to see, and I think it's reasonable to do, the issue of healthcare access for linguistic minorities, to see it actually emerge as an academic discipline. It's an applied discipline, but it requires input from many other disciplines. But it's not just a sort of a punctate problem-solving activity. This is actually a discipline which I think can start developing its own methods, its own theory, its own way of moving forward. And someone had mentioned the need for a whole system approach, and that's exactly what we need to do. But if we're going to do it, it has to be guided by principles, has to be guided by clear ideas about how to falsify ideas so that we don't go off on tangents because we haven't actually critically evaluated what we've done. All of this, what I'm taking away again from this conference, that all of this is possible. I can see in the group that was assembled the knowledge and expertise to make all this happen. And of course, we have to engage in the knowledge mobilization, which takes all of this and brings it to the stakeholders and to the society at large. So, change, there's been a lot of change. We started with zero practically. We've come a long way in the few years, actually, relative, when you think about it, it's not that many years in the scheme of things. It's 8 years, but in the scheme of things, when you consider what has been accomplished and where we're going, I think this has definitely has got liftoff. It's moving, and we should just keep moving. So there's convergence. So I mean, I got to know about people in the CNFS, whom I didn't know before because of this project. We've got colleagues now in Wales we're meeting, and we're meeting with Aboriginal communities. There's this wonderful convergence, interdisciplinary convergence, and a lot of collaboration that is taking place. So I think we can be really proud of what we've accomplished here. We can be really grateful to Health Canada for helping make all of this possible, and to McGill. And I think we have a very exciting time ahead of us. I hope I did justice to what happened here in the last day and a half. And I think if we have time still, we can have a little bit of discussion. But perhaps I'll end there and say thank you very much.